for Ksuvos is to cover, I think it was one daf a week, right? It was not for one amud.
Amud.
Okay, one amud per week.
Confusing because
the idea being that the Magid Shir for each set of 2 weeks is going to choose what to give. I didn't think that either. To choose what to give Shir about during that time. So my Shir for this week, next week. Is going to be an introductory shir. It's going to be a little basic. It's going to be just intro to the Masechta, followed by talking about the Ksuba. But the truth of the matter is, I was thinking about what we're actually going to cover, and certainly if it's an Amud week, you're not going to see a whole lot during the year about the Ksuba itself. The opening two prakim, of the Masechta, are much more about concern for Zinus that took place after the Kiddushin, credibility to claim that a woman was or was not a Basula, to talk about how she lost her Basulim. And then when you get into the third and fourth parak, it's about punishing somebody for onus, mafata, rape, seduction of anara, and only after Masechta actually get into Ksuba. The rights and the responsibilities, when they begin, what is included in them, and all of that. Only begins after that. When you said you were going to sign up, I thought you were going to zoom in from New Jersey.
That's why I showed up.
Got it. So there are sheets in the back. There are sword sheets there. So I still feel, even though the focus is not going to be on the body of the Ksuba for much of the year, nonetheless, it's important for us to know what a Ksuba is. So I'm going to have some overview points first, define some terms, and we'll talk about where the Ksuba comes from, and that's going to be the focus for these 2 weeks. In the event that I have some time left at the end next week, maybe we'll talk about Kadesha a little bit, because I know that's come up a lot in the Hachana and the Rambam's definition of Kadesha versus Mefata. Maybe that will be a point also. But I just want to welcome everybody. I'm so glad to have as many people as we have here compared to the way we started the year last year. And thank you for participating, those who are online. Emir Tashem, you will also be in person soon. Those for whom that is possible. An opening general note on learning this part of Maseches Ksuvos. We're going to come across certain things that, frankly, can be shocking in the way that halacha deals with women and that law-abiding husbands deal with their wives. Example, we're going to come across cases in which a woman says that she was raped and the husband either says, no, that wasn't what happened, or she says she was raped after Kiddushin, and he, in order to improve his Ksuba, is going to say, no, you were raped before Kiddushin. Things that are just like very cold. Or just in general, discussing rape in terms that sound a lot like general forms of Nezek. Like you hit somebody or you rape somebody and almost putting them in, on the same spectrum. So there are a few things to remember. Number one, remember that we're dealing with what is fundamentally a legal discussion, which presents cases that may be unlikely, as though they happen every day, and to present them in very cold, dry terms. As an example of a rare case that the Gemara makes sound like it happens all the time, the claim of Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, right? That's the one that's going to repeat a lot in the first parak. The man marries her and he says, after the first night, there were no bisulim. So that actually would have to be a fairly rare happening, that there would be such a case. Because such a claim can only apply to a woman who is currently under the age of 12 and a half. The Gemara is going to tell us on Daf Lamed Vav, Lamed Zayin, that bisulim disappear naturally over time. We know this from a biological standpoint. What bisulim are, the hymen itself, is the end of a tube, which when a woman is still a fetus, that tube is solid, it's filled, and then over the course of gestation, it deteriorates. What's inside the tube deteriorates, and leaving only a little bit of tissue at the end, which some women never even have from birth. It's already gone from then, but over the course of life, it just physically deteriorates to the point where the Gemara says, by the time she's a bogeres, by the time she's 12 and a half, you can't assume that it should be there at all. She loses it naturally. So that's your cap. She'd have to be under the age of 12 and a half for him to make a claim of, hey, why are there no basulim? Number two, the Gemara in Kiddushin, Mem Aleph, it comes up at the end of the Masechta also, says that you're not allowed to marry off your daughter when she's a ketana. You're not allowed to marry her off when she's under the age of 12. Granted that it works halachically if you do. And as Tosus discusses, there were circumstances in which necessity created kiddushin, if not nisuin, when they were under that age. But the bottom line is that you'd have to be talking, it sounds almost like Ben Sora or Mora, they have to be between the age of 12 and 12 and a half for this to even be a conversation. So the cases that you're talking about are relatively rare, even though it sounds like when you read it, this man came to the Beis Din, this man came to the Beis Din, what happened, you know, let's make them marry on Wednesday night in order that he should be able to go to the Beis Din with such a claim, even though these are actually relatively rare. That's number one. Number two, in terms of the cold language, I'll come to you in a second, Daniel. In terms of the cold language that is used, to describe it, it's, yeah, the husband saying, no, you weren't raped after Kiddushin, you were raped before Kiddushin, and therefore I'm paying you less. This is fundamentally a legal structure of claim and response. Meaning, when a Mishnah presents a litigant's claims, that doesn't mean that that's actually the sum of what the litigant says. It's, we've digested the litigant's claim to the part that's relevant in terms of law. I would hope there was never a husband who actually spoke that way. It's horrifying. So, you know, when you see him deny his wife's claim that she was raped in order to get a break on the ksuba, like, take it with a grain of salt. Yes, Daniel.
There are some places in the parak that specifically deal with Pesach Kesua, but isn't it fair to say that a lot of the points that even come up in Tanis Dana? So it's not really specifically limited from 12 to 12.
In other words, right. No, if there's a claim that there were no Dumei Besulim, but that will go back to the question of where Dumei Besulim come from. Right, and whether they would expect to have Dumei Besulim in the event that the hymen's already gone, right? Chibur Mechver, Mechved Pakid, and so on. Like, I'm from a biological standpoint, I don't know. The Gemara doesn't really discuss. Yeah.
Let's not forget that Ksubis is not Orachayim.
Right.
It's a Nezel. It's not your daily questions, like,
right.
Is my pot kosher, and do I need to do?
Right.
Davening and
it's din Torah, and it's going to be you're correct. It's not like these things are happening every day. It's also important to note the way that many of the chachamim who we see in the Gemara, and particularly I'm thinking of Yudam Alaf, Yudam and Beis, the chachamim who are presented there work to defend the women in such cases. The whole line of Beis Rebbe and what they go through each of the Rabban Gamliels and the in-between generations and what they did when a guy came forward with a claim of Pesach Pasuach Matzasi. Like, he was second-guessing coming to that Beis Din by the time he was done with that conversation. Having said both of those things, you have to acknowledge also that some of this is a matter of a difference of cultures. The emphasis in the Gemara on marrying a basula and investigating whether she was really a basula is not something I think that in most circles you see discussed, bizmanenu. The fact that everybody knew at a wedding whether she was a basula or not, right? The whole Gemara in the beginning of the second parak that's going to talk about what kinds of celebrations they had if it was a basula wedding versus whether it was a ba'ula wedding, even though the Gemara itself says you're not allowed to discuss sexual matters and so on, and it's nivul peh. If they do discuss it, nonetheless, everybody knows that she's a basula. Like, they make a big deal out of that. Like, today, we talk about when the person's reading the ksuba under the chuppah, if it doesn't say bisulaychi, what he should say. Should he actually omit it, or should he say it? Because we're sensitive that, and we don't want that to be a topic of conversation. It's nobody's business. So, yeah, it is startling. The fact that when we get to, God willing, on Yud Zayin, the whole praise of the Kala, right? You know, what do you say when Kesen Meraktin and all of that? And the emphasis in the Gemara is largely on physical attributes. Like, you're dealing with a different society and a different culture, and that also has to be taken into consideration. Yes, Idan. And then Shoshan.
Maybe the thing of regarding the differences between the culture and the two time is not only in terms of how we look on the chuppah itself, and the ceremony, but also what is marriage in general? What is the relationship between a man and a woman?
So we're going to go there. That's where I want to get to next week, because okay. That affects how we look at the ksuba, and that's you're 100% right. Shoshan.
So it sounds like in the Gemara, at the time of the Gemara, there was no concept of virginity for men, right? It's entirely for women?
Yes.
Okay. And the second question is, will we have time to talk about when the rabbis were surprised that ones is more painful, according to women, than seduction, and they interview women for that?
So that discussion comes up later on. That's really more the third parak. So I'm happy to say we'll avoid that. No, it won't be. I think we will. I mean, I can't speak for Rav Jared and Rav Yehuda and what they might be discussing in the course of this man, but it's certainly not on my plate today. But as part of being sensitive to the issue overall, I did note for you an article on the sheet at the top of the sheet. This is an article that Rabbi Ziering published 8 years ago in the foreword. The title of the article was not his choice. When you put something in a newspaper, the newspaper gets to choose the attention-getting title. But if you actually read the article, you find it has nothing to do with the title, the Chlal. Nonetheless, the article itself, I thought, was very interesting. He talks about there, I'm not going to read it aloud, you have it on your sheet, but he talks about how when they were going to learn the third parak in Ksuvos, which is what discusses Ones, cases of rape, when they were learning it in the Gush, so they had two things happen. Number one, they brought the director of a rape crisis center to come speak to them, and they also had a late night talk with Rav Moshe Lichtenstein about the ramifications of what the Gemara is presenting. As he put it in there, to understanding how modern value judgments relate to those of the Torah, and what do you do when you have this contrast in cultures that I just described. I thought that was actually a really good thing that they did. And ultimately, by the end of next week, hopefully when I get to discuss a particular view on the nature of Ksuba, it's going to provide an interesting counterpoint to some of what I've actually said now. So put a pin in this discussion, as something that we're going to come back to once we know more about Ksuba, but I felt like that was an important introduction. Okay? Okay. So also, this is a little bit basic, but not everybody is on the same page in terms of knowledge of basic terms, and we're going to fly through things in the Masechta, and I worry about, people just making sure that they know that they're using the same language. So I put down Milim Chashuvim on the sheet. Kiddushin and Nisuin. Kiddushin is also known as Erisin. It is the first of two stages of marriage, which establishes them as married but does not permit sexual relations between them. It's done with Kesef, Shtar, Bia, right? Generally speaking by Kesef, giving a ring in our weddings. Nisuin is the second stage. What exactly creates Nisuin is a good question. Is it the chuppah? Is it the Sheva Brachos? Is it the Yichud? Is the chuppah Yichud? That's not our discussion. We did learn Kiddushin together a few years ago and had some fun discussions about that. Three stages in a woman's age. Ketana is a girl who is not yet 12 years old. Nara is a girl who is 12 years old and has developed signs of physical maturity. And then Bogeres is a girl who is 12 and a half years old, having already been a Na'ara. So the segue is Ketana, Na'ara, Bogeres. Some legal terms. Sexual relations that are prohibited mid-oraisa, biblically. Shnios, sexual relations that are prohibited rabbinically. It's a second layer around the araios, hence the term shnios. Ones, it means rape. Mefata is a seducer. Pitui is seduction. The last of the terms here are the ones that get people confused a lot, so I figured I would take the time to describe them. Nichsei Tzon Barzel and Nichsei Malog. So Nichsei Tzon Barzel is a term for the property that a woman brings into the marriage. Literally, it means iron sheep, and I'll explain why. But it's property that a woman brings into a marriage for which the value is set at the time of the marriage. It is generally recorded in the ksuba. This is also known as nidunya, right? That's a term that is an Aramaic term for it. Dowry is the usual term in English. And the husband takes responsibility for the property. Upon their divorce or upon the husband's death, the original value of that, whatever amount was put into the ksuba, is due back to her. However, if it goes up in value, then the husband or the estate gets whatever is greater. So if she brought it in, it was worth $10,000 at the time of the marriage, it's worth $50,000 by the time the marriage is over, $40,000 goes to the estate, $10,000 goes to her. Which is why it has the title of Nichsei Tzon Barzel. The Rivan writes in Yevamos, where this term is used in the Mishnah, that since the husband knows that any improvement is going to him, he has an incentive to make sure to keep this intact. And therefore, it's like iron sheep. These sheep are going nowhere. he's going to take good care of it, and that's Litzon Barzel. So she is going to get back whatever value she brought in. However, she might bring in stuff that she doesn't want to write into the ksuba. She doesn't want to make it part of the husband's property that he's such that he's able to get the improvements, or property that she gained during the marriage, which doesn't go to the husband, something that comes up later in the Masechta. And that's what we call nichsei malog. So nichsei malog is property that she brings into the marriage, but the husband does not take responsibility for returning its value at the end of the marriage, or property that she gained during the marriage in a way that's not going to be shared with the husband. The husband is allowed to use this during the marriage. However, at the end of the marriage, whatever condition it's in, it belongs to her. And the Yerushalmi in Yevamo says the reason why it's called nichsei malog comes from the term maliga. Right? Molgan, those who did Yaredeya are familiar with the term. Maliga is a process in which you're removing the feathers from a bird, posthumously, right? The bird's already dead, but through scalding water. And so the idea of maliga is that this is going to lose its feathers. It's going to deteriorate. Since the husband knows whatever state this is in at the end of the marriage, it's going back to her. It could be entirely gone. He's going to use it up. He doesn't care about keeping it, in its current state. So since it can deteriorate like that and can be lost, therefore it's called nichsei malog.
So which ones become one? Which ones become the other?
So anything that is going to become tzon barzel that has that guarantee of you get back the original value has to be recorded in the ksuba at the beginning of the marriage.
All right, so this is a negotiation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Total negotiation. Lots of fun. That's, we have the classic line, leka ksuba de la ramu batigra. There's no such thing as a ksuba without a fight. That's also, I think, one of the reasons given for not getting married on Friday afternoon is because of the fear that it could run into Shabbos. That whole Ramah, where he nearly got run out of Krakow for holding a wedding that he was told, that people said was done on Shabbos. So yes. The ksuba used to be a far more interesting process than it is today. Today it's a photo op. You sign it, everybody takes a picture, the video, someone reads it under the chuppah, that's,
today,
all well and good.
So today it happens at the prenuptial stage rather than the ksuba.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Much more of that. You don't want this going on at the wedding. Although it did, clearly. but yes. I was talking to Daniel about the fact that, I think you might have been there when I gave the shiur on this, the fact that the ksuba is not claimed in court. These days, when a couple divorces, no one actually claims the ksuba amounts. They do whatever the disposition is that society has decided happens. And
but
if
they,
some
in Israel they do have discussions about it.
In Israel they do.
Yeah,
interesting.
Mean, many times they want the woman to be mochel, but yes, they have the ksuba.
Okay, that's very funny. Not in Chutz Laaretz, and in Canada you likely couldn't, because one of the requirements for marriage agreements is that you have to actually know the agreement before you enter into it. And how many chassan and kala couples actually know what they're agreeing to, especially when our Ashkenazi ksubos, record it in currencies that no one knows anything about. What are zakukin? They go back to Austria and a couple of centuries ago and ask somebody.
The lacha is the exact opposite.
Yeah.
If you sign it means you understood it.
Yes.
No, but they sign a pre-marriage.
What I'm saying is that marriage agreements are not binding under secular law in Canada if the couple didn't actually know what was in it. There are also other reasons. You require in Canada full disclosure of all assets beforehand. Yeah, there are solutions, but no one does them. That's what I'm saying. There are solutions. You could sit down with them and explain it until their eyes glaze over. Absolutely. Okay. So, brief history of the ksuba. In biblical times, and we're going to come back to this, but in biblical times, you had something called a mohar payment that went from the man to the woman. It is referred to in the Chumash, as we're going to discuss. Interesting to note, among Muslims, they also have something called the mohr, M-O-H-R. For more on that, you could see the article I gave you in Source Aleph, Mohar Muslimi, that talks about this. We're going to discuss shortly whether ksuba actually is a de'oraisa or a de'rabanan, but without a doubt, at least some of it is de'rabanan. The Gemara in ksuvas daf pebez amud aleph has Shimon ben Shetach place a lien on a man's property to pay off the ksuba as his own takana. That's not something that's core to the ksuba. There definitely are elements that are de'rabanan. I also gave you a reference to an article by Dr. Yoel Shiloh in Source Beis where he talks about the evolution of the various payments that are in the ksuba and the currencies that are in the ksuba. Ayin Shum, for those who are interested in that. Shoshone, you had wanted to say something?
Yeah, is there a reason that the Ashkenazi ksubas use outdated currency, Balafdig?
Yeah, because we're Ashkenazim. We are just much less interesting than Sfardim. The answer is because we don't like to mess us. That's the basic reason. And since Ashkenazim also lived in societies where they weren't free to carry out the terms of the ksuba anyway, I suspect that that was actually a major element. It's very interesting to note that when you read Achronim, the tshuvos of Achronim, the Sfardish, this goes back to a tshuva of the Rashba, the Sfardi tshuvos are much more lamaisa, and the Ashkenazi tshuvos are much more lumdish. And one of the major reasons for it is because the Ashkenazim couldn't actually carry them out. You couldn't actually do anything. You had no power. The government didn't allow us to run our own affairs. Whereas in Sephardi countries, they allowed the Jews autonomy within their communities. The Rashba predicted this centuries ago. This is the Rashba I was mentioning to you before, Daniel. The Rashba centuries ago, when a family came to him, they wanted to change the order of the Yerusha in order for the daughters to inherit also. And they argued, Dina de Machusadina. And he said, if you're going to follow Dina de Machusadina, you can just throw out, you know, Seder Nezikin. Why bother learning anything? You can close the Batei Medrash and be done with it. There's more to be said about that also. Yes?
I realize it could also make a huge difference to Ashkenazi and Sephardi split. I was reading an article earlier that said that a lot of times the ksuba just isn't shayach because of a parent or being a gershom, that you can't get divorced unless both agree.
Right.
So it's not really shy with the ksuba. Is they can.
In other words, the concern about the divorce on a whim is less relevant.
Yeah. But also because the actual ksuba amount isn't relevant.
Interesting.
She can say, "I'm not willing to get divorced unless you give me this amount."
Right. Interesting point. I suppose. The thing is that there are still ways that is dealt with in various communities. So,
By the way, this year is the Shemitah year, so Shemitah's Ksafim, the Ramah says that in our places, there's no Shemitah's Ksafim. Even without a prosbo.
That's a whole other, right.
No, meaning that, yeah. As Rav says, it could be that all these kind of monetary things were relevant in Ashkenazi places because they just couldn't.
I mean, the Ramah is not approving that.
He's not approving it.
I gave Shir on that a while back, yeah. He's not approving it. He's just saying, hey, no one's doing it. So the role of the ksuba is to codify an obligation from the husband to make a payment to his wife. That's really what this, what it's about. Originally, the ksuba obligation was actually due at the time of the marriage. I brought you on the sheet an interesting case in the Rashba, which we're not going to read through, but I wanted you to have access to it in Source Gimel. It's a tshuva of the Rashba where a wife claimed her ksuba payment while the husband was alive. So the debts are ready from now. Why? It was a kenunya. It was a plot between the husband and the wife. The husband had a creditor who he owed money to from after the marriage began. He had taken out some loan after the marriage began. So his wife says, if I claim the ksuba from him now, it's a prior claim, right? And therefore, the creditor can't take the assets that are for the ksuba because those assets are mine. And my claim came before his. The Rashba rejected that. He said that's not the way it works. The ksuba, even though it is agreed to at the time of the wedding, nonetheless, it is only collectible at the time that the marriage ends. It's not collectible earlier. And the Rama notes that the payment for her nedunya is a payment at dissolution of the marriage, right? The refund of the nichsei tzon barzel, even though it's based on the value of things from the beginning. Okay. Our ksuba document includes more than that core payment, right? The core payment of 200 zuz for a besula, 100 zuz for an almana, right? With the goal of preventing thoughtless divorce, right? That's all one piece of it. There's also the tzon barzel, the valuation of the nedunya that she brings in, that's in the ksuba. And then you also have Tosefes ksuba, v'hosif lamin dilei. He says, I am also going to add a certain amount. And I gave you a link in Source Dalid to an article, The Ksuba in America. For those who do want to know what Zikukin are, you could read that. The ksuba also records the tnai beis din, various tnai and various conditions for the husband's responsibilities. I gave you the Rambam's list in Source, hey, but again, I don't want to take a lot of time on it. I just want to note it. There are three biblical obligations the husband has to his wife, she'er ksus ve'ona, which we interpret to mean food, clothing, and sexual relations. In addition to that, you have the derabanan obligations, which are medicine, ransoming her if she's taken captive, burial, support for her as a widow after he passes away, support for her unmarried daughters after he passes away, inheritance of her ksuba payments by her sons from this marriage, right? Ksuba's ban in dichrin. And I also note for you, although I didn't put the link on the sheet, you can find it on Wikipedia, the ktuba of Babata. This is, I believe, the oldest known ksuba from the 1st or 2nd century Common Era. It was found in Nachal Chever near Ein Gedi, along with letters from Bar Kokhba that are fascinating in its own right. And it's basically very similar to what we have, Bismanenu. B-A-B-A-T-H-A. Yeah, Babata. They also have found hundreds of ksuvos from the Cairo Geniza, going back to, I think, the 6th century Common Era. And they include the various Tanai Bezdin, just testifying to the accuracy of the Masorah that we have, largely because of people like the Ashkenazim who don't change Shtaros.
I mean, do we have in the ktuba, like we say in Gideon, that there is a Torah, something that this is the main core of the ktuba, but without it, it's not going to be kosher, or all the Tanaim here are?
So this is a good question, a little bit beyond the scope of what we're talking about right now, but the Gemara does discuss, fourth parak, talks about the idea that that even if the ksuba is missing these things, they're still binding. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's Tanai Bezdin. Sorry?
It's now
Daf Yomi. Yeah, that's fourth parak. Yeah. Somewhere on Daf Nun, an Aleph base. Yeah. Yesterday's Daf. Okay. So there are also financial rights that the husband gains upon marriage that are not recorded in the Ksuba. So he has rights to Masa Yodeha, which she produces, although not the Ha'adafa if she does extra work. He also gains what's called Yusufrucht. U-S-U-F-R-U-C-T. Good word. The Yusufrucht. And what it means is proceeds from her Nechzei Tzon Barzel. So she brings in the dowry, he gets the benefits from it, he gets the fruit from it, that's Yusufrucht. I did note for you here in Source Vav, I brought you a tshuva from Menchas Asher Chelek Beis, in which there's a fight over some kind of a trust fund that she has and benefits from the trust fund. And Rav Asher Weiss says, the guy does get the benefits from the trust fund. However, he is obligated to make all the expenditures for the trust fund. Funding it, management of it, and all of that is part of his obligation. And lastly, we know this, it's hopefully every Masada Kedushin mentions it at the wedding, the requirement that she has to have the ksuba under her control at all times during the marriage. Without that, they may be usher to each other. I did see an article, which I've linked for you in Sor Zion in Tchumen. It also appears in English in the Journal of Halakha and Contemporary Society, with suggestions about maybe if the ksuba is registered somewhere, if there's a registry of ksubos, that would be valid. What if you took a picture of it with your phone and now you have a digital picture of it? Maybe that would be sufficient even if you lost the document, at least until...
The note has the Hetek Ktuba in there.
Yeah.
That's why when there was a fire in Haifa and many houses were burned and there were no longer ksubos,
they were still,
they said you could rely on the Hetek and carry
until you the, until you do a ksuba dirkasa.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yes, Daniel.
Rely on a picture?
So that's the discussion. That's a discussion. Does it qualify? I mean, today people can do whatever they want with a digital picture.
You can't use that in base then.
Right.
That's what Rabbi Yoshev was against it. He says you can't have two shtarls. You can't just use it. So that is
what happens more frequently than you might think. So I think it was in the beginning of the summer. Rabbi Karfunkel was at a wedding in Miami, and that one in the morning he went back to that room with whoever his Sammy Strasser.
Yeah.
Okay. So they go back to them. They couldn't get into the room. So they had to go down to the lobby and just share the callers. There are a whole bunch of people. They can't find the ksuba. So you call Rabbi Lowy like at 1 or 2 in the morning.
The answer is ksuba d'irkasa. When I was in the Shul Rabbanus, I wrote probably at least half a dozen ksuba d'irkasa.
The question was at the wedding. They had the ksuba
right after
the wedding. They lost the ksuba
in the morning.
Immediately they lost the ksuba.
Stefanski.
You're laughing.
Okay.
Okay, so this is all of this was just, introduction in general to the Masechta concepts and so on, so that we're all, on the same playing field. But let's get into the issue of who invented the ksuba. So view number one is Ksubas de'oraisa. That's a biblical thing. We already noted the existence of the word mohar in the Torah. This is what we're going to look at now. So if you take a look at Source Ches from Parshas Mishpatim, the law of Mefata. The rule is, in the event that a man seduces a girl who is, number one, a na'ara, between the age of 12 and 12 and a half, discussion in the Gemara in the third parak, what if she's a katana, not our discussion right now. She is also a besula. Mahor yimharena lo le'isha. He has to be mohar her, effectively, as his wife. Some kind of act that makes her his wife. And however, if the father won't agree to this, or if she refuses, it's not explicit in the pasuk, but the Gemara says explicitly that this is so, that she also has the opportunity to refuse it. If they refuse, kesef yishkol kemohar habesulos. So he has to pay in accordance with the mohar of besulos. So mohar is some kind of financial payment, right? That seems fairly clear. And it's normally given to a basula when marrying her, such that giving this woman, Mahor Yimharena, is part of an act of marriage. Whether a woman who was mifuta, who was seduced, is going to want to marry him is another story. And again, that goes back to some of our cultural discussions that we had before. But that's what's stated here. There is some kind of financial payment normally given to a besula when marrying her, and we have a confirming source for that earlier in the Chumash. If you take a look at source Tess, the story of Dina, right? Shechem wants to marry Dina, and he says to Yaakov and family, Harbu alai ma'od mohar umatan ve'etina, increase for me the mohar, and I will give it, usnulias anara le'isha, and give me the girl as my wife. And various sources, in fact, render mohar as ksuba. So the Mechilta, halachic medrash, very important in our Masorah. Take a look at source Yud. Mohar yimharena lo le'isha, the story of Mefate, loma ne'mar, lefish ne'mar v'nasan ha'isha shochevima, since the pasuk says, the man who sleeps with her shall give, I might think that just like in a rape case, he has to pay this fine immediately. So too, in the Mefata case, he also has to pay it immediately. I would think that the two go together, just because there's similar language in the case of rape in Dvarim Chav Beis, and in the case of Mefata here. Tamad lomar mahor yimarana lo le'isha. No, the Torah says, no, you're going to actually marry her, which is not... continue. Magidshu osa olav mohar. That teaches that he makes it a mohar payment, which the Mechilta says is not done immediately. Veimar el ksuba. Mohar refers to ksuba. And they give you the pasuk from Shechem, Harbu alai ma'od mohar umatan. So the Mechilta says explicitly, mohar is ksuba, which means ksuba is de'oraisa. Right? The Mechilta is not vague. Ksuba is de'oraisa, and Rashi says so. If you take a look at source Yid Aleph, Rashi on Befateh, Mohor Yimharena, Yifsok La Mohar Kemishpat Ish L'Ishto. Set a Mohar for her like a man does for his wife, Shekosev La Ksuba V'Yisa Ena. He writes her a Ksuba and he marries her. That would be very easy if we just ended there and says Ksuba's Del Raisa and go right there. It's obviously not so simple. But there's support for this view in the concept of a Pilegesh. Pilegesh, of course, is a Del Raisa concept. We find Pilagshim, I think, first with Avraham. If you take a look at Source Yubez, Livnea Pilagshim, Asher L'Avraham, Nasan Avraham Matanos, we don't know who these Pilagshim are. There's one view that this is referring just to Keturah, even though it's in the plural. But nonetheless, Avraham has Pilagshim. What makes a Pilegesh distinct from a wife? Says the Gemara in our edition in Sanhedrin Chafalef and Source Yud Gimel. The Gemara there is talking about a king's wives and how many wives he can have versus how many Pilagshim he can have. And it says, what's the difference? My Nashim u my Pilagshim? Amr Vyudam Arav? Nashim b'ksuba u'b'kidushin. When you marry a woman, there's ksuba and there's kidushin. Pilagshim below ksuba below kidushin. Pilagesh, no ksuba and no kidushin. Sorry?
We saw in our reasons, there's a
question. There are at least three girsos in this. There is pilagshim below ksuba below kiddushin. There is pilagshim there's pilagshim below kiddushin, and there's pilagshim below kiddushin uksuba.
I think this is the girsa that
But this is the standard. This is the standard one that we have. If you open up a standard Vilna Shas, whatever, that is what you are going to see. So the fact that the Gemara says that the definition of a Pilegesh is that there's no Ksuba and Pilegesh exists in the Torah indicates to me that Ksuba must have been around, because otherwise, what are you talking about? What does that even mean? Rashi on the story with Shechem quotes this Gemara. Well, so, yeah.
We have to say that? I mean, we're trying maybe to okay, in the Gemara world, what Pilegesh is, when it's translated to those, to their time, to say it's without Ksuba and Kiddush.
So you can say that if you have to, but if I have no reason to say otherwise, my default assumption is going to be that this is what you're doing. You're defining a biblical term with biblical terms. And not to say I'm projecting backward what exists in my head.
Because the word Ketubah doesn't appear in the Torah. So they don't. I don't think that the Gemara explains the term Pilegesh, which is biblical, with a biblical term. Because Ketubah is not a biblical term.
Right, but Mohar is the biblical term.
So they could use Mohar. But
right.
They're not using Mohar, they're using Ketubah. So maybe.
Yeah. I hear you. I mean, keep in mind the word Kiddushin also doesn't appear in the Torah.
Right.
You know, so they could have said Bilikuchen or something like that. Bilikuchen of Ksuba.
Yeah.
The Rambam also seems to support the idea that Ksuba is de'oraisa. The very first place we see this is in his introduction to Hilchos Ishus in Source Yadalad. The Rambam writes, Hilchos Ishus, yesh bechlal an arba mitzvos, shtei mitzvos asei, shtei mitzvos lo sasei. You have four mitzvos, two aseis, two lo sasei. Zeu pratan, and here are the specifics. Aleph, Lisa, Isha, I underlined it, b'ksuva v'kidushin. To marry a woman with Ksuva and Kiddushin. Interesting question, not for right now. The order's backwards. Right? It's Kiddushin to Ksuva. The Ksuva may be binding from the time of Kiddushin in the event that something happens and the payment is, but we have this whole discussion about Ksuva being related to the Nisu and not to the Kiddushin. But that's not for right now. Number two, Shalot Tiboel Isha below Ksuva v'Kiddushin. Also, no relations without Ksuba and Kiddushin. That's the Al-Kadesha discussion, which we're going to come back to. And then the two other ones, Ksher Ksus Viona and Peru Revu. The Rambam is outlining the biblical mitzvahs involved in marriage, and he lists Ksuba twice. There are marriage in one and sexual relations in the other, and he lists Ksuba twice. Not only that, in Sefer HaMitzvos, where the Rambam talks about the Isser Kadesha, the prohibition against promiscuous relations, as we'll translate it, The Rambam writes, mitzvah shin nun hey, lo sa'asei 355. He sheziranu shalalov al isha below ksuba below kiddushin. We are warned not to have relations without ksuba and without kiddushin. Granted that we're going to see that he says something different in Hilchos Ishus. We'll get to that. But right now it sounds like ksuba is in fact de'oraisa, and the biblical label of ksuba comes up in at least two halachos in Mishneh Torah. Source test, Zayin, Hilchos Nara, Besula, Perek Aleph, Halacha, Gimel. Talking about the case of mifate, the case of seduction, and he says, "Hamafuta shela ratza liinase lemifate. If the woman does not wish to marry the seducer, o shela ratza via litnalo, or the father doesn't wish to have the marriage go forward, o shela ratza hu lichno, so the man refuses. So in the case of rape, he doesn't have the right to refuse. In the case of mifate, he does. Hareza nosin kenasa. Then he pays the fine, like we saw in the mechilta." Vaholech, vein kofenos elichnos, he doesn't have to marry her, vim ratzu vekansa, and if he does, and they want, and they marry, eina mashlam knas, ella kosev la ksuba kishar besulos. The rule is, write her a ksuba as is done for the other besulos. This line in and of itself is not definitive, of course, that he means it's de'oraisa, but it sounds like it's part of the core obligation. And then the other is that the Rambam in Source Yudzayin, in his definition of Pilegesh, adopts the language of the Gemara in Sanhedrin that we saw, Sanhedrin Chaf Aleph, Pilagshim below Ksuba u below Kiddushin. No Ksuba and no Kiddushin. So Pilegesh has Ksuba. Not only that, the language of our Ksuba seems to support the idea that it's De'oraisa. Right, the line in our Ksuba, I borrow the text from the Nachla Shiva. For those who have not used the Nachla Shiva, you should. Nachla Shiva is fantastic. That was when I started getting involved in Ksuba the Irkasa and all these other issues in Rabbanus. Nachla Shiva is, I think he's 17th century, 17th or 18th, resource for all sorts of shtaros. Obviously, you can't just work from that, but it's extremely valuable. So, and it's on the Bar Ilan, so you can cut and paste. So he says, V'yehivna lechi mor besulaychi, and the man promises to give her the mohar of her status as a besula of her besulim, kesef zuze masan, 200 zuz, dechazi lechi mide oraisa, which are suitable for you, biblically. And in fact, Rabbeinu Tam, in Tosas and Ksuvas Yudam and Aleph, in Source Yates, uses this as a source to support the idea that Ksuva is de oraisa. He quotes you the Gemara, which we're going to see in Source Chaf, where you have the idea presented that Ksuba is de Rabbanan, and then after that he says, it was in the first paragraph in Source Yates, the end of it, Vekasha, it's difficult to say Ksuba is de Rabbanan. Denagu lichtov b'ksuba kesef zuze masan dechazu leichi mide oraisa. We write in it 200 zuz that you're supposed to get mide oraisa. He says the answer is that we follow Rabbi Shimon Gamliel in the Gemara in Ksuva Stap Kufiyah, the Mishnah there, which we're going to see in Source Chaf Aleph. The Maisi Lanami Basamuch. The Amar Notzin Lami Moes Kaputkia. We'll get to the Kaputkia discussion very shortly, so hold off on that. But the point is, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel takes the view that Ksuva is Del Raisa, Vakayim Alam, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the Mishnah Seinu. We have a rule. We follow Rabbi Shimon Gamliel when his position appears in a Mishnah, other than three cases. Ari Vitzidon Varaya Achrona. This is not in the three cases. So he says, we follow Shiba Gamliel, that Ksuba is, in fact, de oraisa. Then it goes further, and you have the re saying, we don't follow Rav Nachman, in that, I'm not getting into that right now. Then you get the Rivam, who says, and Rav Ashi disagrees with Rav Nachman. And he says, when you see in the Gemara, Yivamos Peites Amad Aleph, my time at Akinu Rabbanan Ksuba, why did the rabbis enact Ksuba? That doesn't mean that all of Ksuba is a de Rabbanan. What it means is, my time at Takinu Rabbanan Ksuba Hecha de Takinu Kigon Be'almana. When there is a Ksuba de Rabbanan, because everybody agrees the Almana's Ksuba, the Grusha's Ksuba is in fact Rabbinic, Mohar Besulaichi is the one that's De Oraisa, the one for the Kimora Besulos. So that's where they say that that's where we say it's De Oraisa by a Besula, but where it's an Almana, it is enacted for this purpose.
What's the core difference between a ketubah for an almana and for a ketubah?
Well, the core difference is the money.
That's all?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the money. All the other responsibilities remain the same.
So why would that be in a different category? That means that the only money is a different, that the money is from... If we say that the ketubah for
almana is from... Just because the Torah doesn't talk about it. The Torah only talks about the one for
money either. It just talks about the
money. Correct.
It's even more up to low.
Yeah,
right.
No, but I asked what's the core difference between the two? It's only the money.
All right, I mean, hypothetically, to propose that there would have been one is an interesting idea that has no... It's not reflected anywhere in the Gemara, and
so
certainly not in the
Chumash. According to this, should we assume when the Torah said Gemor Betulot, it's talking about the money, not about the concept? If we defer it from Almana with the money...
Is the Sherek Suzvonam deraisa for an Almana?
Sherek Suzvonam is deraisa for an Almana.
It is?
Yes. Yeah. It's just the ksuba payment that we're talking about. As far as I know, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Not only that, there's even a clause in the ksuba, it's a derabanan clause, but there's a clause in the ksuba that's only applicable for a woman who's been married before. Right? I hope it's only applicable for a woman who's married before. Certainly she's not a basula. Right? The one about the daughters she has from other marriages ostensibly is only talking about that, taking care of them, right, from the, that he has to support
and
them as well.
And is a derabanan as...
Yeah. Right. No, in a chanami, it's a derabanan. I'm just saying, like, we have in our ksuba a clause that will only apply, you know, if it's a woman who's not a basula. Yeah.
Question.
Yeah.
In Ted Zion, that the kosev of ksuba, which are basula, that she sent basula.
Kosev la ksuba... Kishar habisulos. Oh, you mean here? Yes. That's the Rambam's point. The Rambam's point is, since, if not for you, Mr. Mefateh, she would be a basula, therefore you have to give that. And the Nosei Kalim there discuss that and ask, where did the Rambam get this idea from? It's not Poshet that this is actually true. The Mishnah Melech, I want to come back to, talks about this. But yes, that's what he means. He means, since he is the reason she's not a basula, therefore he has to give her the ksuba that she would get if she were a basula.
Whatever it was worth at that time, say that's
what it's going to be. So we have sort of a standard in terms of, otherwise we have different denominations and money from all types of countries and currencies and everything else. So
right.
That they just tried to say that.
In other words, the.
It's not proving that there's a super. It's proving, I think the point is it's talking about.
So we're going to get to that. That's the Russia's position, that the oraisa is meant to define the currency. Honestly, I find that a very hard read of the language, but that is going to be the Russia's position. Yeah. Yeah. So far, we have what seems like good evidence that the ksuba is de oraisa, right? This is a very linear shear. This is not like a challenging thing. Like, you know, we've progressed from psukim to the mechilta to, you know, language in the Gemara, language in our ksuba, the Rambam, you know, all very neat and clean. Except that two passages of Gemara in our Masechta seem to say that ksuba is in fact a takana de rabbanan. So first of all, this Gemara in ksuba's daf yud amud aleph, itmar. Source Chaf. Amr of Nachman Amr Shmuel. Mishum Rishum Ben Elazar. Chacham Tiknulam of Nos Yisrael, Lebesula Masayim Ula Amana Mana. The Chachamim said it is 200 for the Besula and 100 for the Almana, right? The Mana is 100 Zuz. Chachamim Tiknulahem. It's the rabbis. Veim Hem Inu Shem Amr Pesach Pasuch Matzasi Neaman. And then they address a side problem, which is, a man shows up in Beis Din and says, there were no Besulim, we're going to believe him. Why do we believe him? Just like that, we're just going to believe him? The answer is, the rabbis are the ones who created his obligation to pay in the first place, and they said, we're also going to believe him in the event that he says, Pesach Pesuach Matzasi. So the Gemara says, Im kein maho ilu chachamim betakanasam, then why bother doing this? Every husband's going to get out of having to pay. So, Amar Rava Chazakin Am Tarech Bazudu Mavsida, Rava says, no, he's not getting married to her just in order to do this. And there's a whole discussion in Tosvos, the separate Tosvos on the Amud, about, you know, the question of what would he be trying to do? Would he be trying to get out of paying a full ksuba, or would he be trying to demolish the marriage altogether? The Tana. We then follow up and say, since this is fundamentally a rabbinic fine for the husband, since it's rabbinic, therefore he can pay with the least of his property, as opposed to certain other payments, which are biblical payments, which you can't do that with. This is a rabbinic thing, therefore you can. Then the Gemara says, what do you mean, a fine? What is that? You're fining him for getting married? No, it's not a fine. It's a takana of the chachamim. Bottom line, the statement right now is that it is derabbanan. Then Rabbi Shimba Gamliel says, what are you talking about? Rabbi Shimba Gamliel, Omer ksubas isha min ha-Torah. It's de'oraisa. To which the Gemara says, really? Umiyah Rabbi Shimba Gamliel, hachi, does he really believe that? Vatanya, I have a braisa. Kesef yishko kamar ha-besulos. That pasuk that we've seen before from Mefateh, that he pays like the Mora Besulos, Shezek Mora Besulos, Mora Besulos Kazem, Mikan Samcho Chachamim, Liksubas Isha Min HaTorah. That teaches me there is this Mora Besulos. This is my basis for saying Ksuba is De'oraisa. And then Shem Gamliel says, no, Ksubas Isha Eina Midivrei Torah, Ela Midivrei Sofrim. Ksuba is De'rabanan. Shem Gamliel, red-handed. So the Gemara's answer is no, Epoch. They reverse it. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel was the first speaker. He's the one who says Daraisa, and the anonymous speaker is the one who says it's Darabanan. So the Gemara says, "My chazis da abchas pasraisa epoch kamaisa." Why do you say that? Maybe you should reverse what you said before. Maybe Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is the one who says it's Darabanan. When you said Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says it's Daraisa, maybe you were wrong. No, I know Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says Ksuba Isha is Daraisa from the Mishnah on Kuf Yud Amud Beis. The case they're discussing there, which you'll actually see in Source Chaf Aleph, but I might as well mention it here, is a case in which a man and a woman get married in one location, and then they move to another location. And the ksuba would have one value using the currency of the place where they got married, and a different value in the place that they move to. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's position is that you use the more expensive currency. That's what you do. Mo is Kaputkia. Kaputkia, I think in English, is Cappadocia, somewhere in Turkey. I learned that many, many years ago. I have no idea where. I don't even know if it's true. But I think it was freshman year in MTA. I think that was when. Because I remember Rav Yitzchak Cohen saying Kaputkia. That's very memorable for those who know him. So, but in any case, the point is that he said you use the more expensive currency, which is which is what you would do if it's De'oraisa. So that shows Rabbi Shimon Gamliel believes that Ksuba is De'oraisa. Alternatively, they say, you know what, we can rewrite that entire braisa, and that takes away all the problems. Mikan samcha chacham l'ksubas isha min ha-Torah, because of this pasuk kesef yishkol kamar absulos, therefore we know ksubas de'araisa, ksubas amana eina midivrei tomi divrei sofim, the one for the amana is de'rabanan, shebishim gamliel omer, ksubas amana eina midivrei Torah elemi divrei sofim, because Rav Shimon Gamliel says the ksuban of an amana is rabbinic, not ksuba in general. Yeah.
Why can't we say maybe that Rav Nachman, when he says, because of the difference in the Lishna, between Rav Nachman's opinion and Rav Shbagu's opinion, Rav Nachman doesn't say the word ketubah at all in his Lishna. Why can't we say that we differ between the concept and the details? In other words, the details are the Rabbanan, according to Rav Nachman, but maybe he agrees with Rav Shbagu, that the concept of tuba, that you need to have a more tuba.
So I'm going to come back to that idea. It's not going to make it in this week, but I'm going to come back to that idea next week. That is indeed a possible read of this. There is such a possibility. The other source in our Masechta is what we've already referred to in Kuf Yud Amud Beis. I brought you the Mishnah there and the Gemara on it, but at this point we've basically covered it. The key point is that if you're saying to pay the more expensive currency, you believe ksubas de oraisa. However, the position that we are actually going to paskin is going to be like the view that ksuba is de rabbanon. That's what we're going to end up following. Also, brought you almost pay tests in source chav beis, which we already quoted earlier. My time takinu la rabbanon ksuba. Why did the rabbis enact ksuba? That makes it sound like it is indeed rabbinic. Ramban takes this view. Ramban says, I don't like all those Rashis that you saw that say that ksuba is de oraisa. I don't think that's correct at all. So if you take a look at Ramban on the case of Mefate in source Chaf Gimel, he tells you what mohar actually is. Umash Shapirish Harav, when Rashi says, B'mohor yim haren alo, sheyifsok la mohar kemish bad ish lisha shekosev la ksuba, when Rashi says that mohar is ksuba, eino emes. It's not true. Shamafata nisa'ena eno nosein knas. If he marries her, he's not paying a knas. That we know. Vim yegashena achar nisu'en ein lo alav klum min ha-Torah. And if he divorces her, then there is no payment at all that is biblically owed. Shaksuva midivrei sovrim. Oksuva is rabbinic. Then what did the word mohar mean? Avo perish mohar. Hashiluchim sha'adam mishaleach la'arusatso klei kesef klei zav v'gadim l'tzarchei achupa v'anisu'en v'heim anikroim sivlonos p'lashon chachamim. Presents. Sorry?
No, there's two. That's a sublonos, no?
Yes, there's that also. Yeah. But it's presents. Presents and gifts. That's what he is sending her. V'chein Amru Mari Hadri quotes the Gemara Bava Basso Kufim Hey Amad Aleph, which is talking about what happens, Rahmana Litzlan, in the event that there's a death between the Kedushin and the Nisuin, such that they can't go forward. And it says, Mohari Hadri. Mohari is the term for the sublonos, for the gifts. And it says, the gifts go back. So it's very clear as far as he is concerned that that is true, and he quotes you Unkelus. Unkelus Amar Harbu alai ma'od mohar umatan asku alai lachada moharin umasnan. Give me a lot of Shchem says. Give me a lot of mohar and matanon that I should give. Veloaya nodelem lichtov laksubos harbe meod. He says the fact that the word mohar can be a plural tells you it's not a ksuba because there's only one ksuba. So clearly it's not. It's siblonos, it's presents that are going to be given. That's the position of Ramban there. It is also the position that the Ramban takes in Bereshis in the with the Pilagshim. If you take a look at source Chav Dalet, he quotes you Rashi, Nashim Biksuva, Pilagshim Shalom Biksuva, Kedara Benashim Pilagshim de David Sanhedrin, Veina Dover Kain, it's not so. Kilosi Kare Pilegesh Elekshi Belo Kidushin. He says, Pilegish is only when there is no Kiddushin. Kiaksuva midivrei sofrim. It's not about Ksuva. Ksuva is rabbinic. And then he says something that we're going to come back to next week, and Idan is trying to jump there already. Aval efshe shegam b'nei noa kasher yisulem nashi kemishpatan bebe'ilo hayunogim lichtov lehen ma'orumatan. It could be that at the time when the pre-Matan Torah people would get married, they got married via Bia, like the Rambam describes. However, they would also write gifts. And in the event that there was going to be a relationship in which he would divorce her whenever he wants and there's no formality to it and the kids from the relationship do not inherit his property, then he didn't write anything. But it's not ksuba in the sense of the 200 zuz. That's Ramban's position, and I rounded it out with Ramban on Shechem in source Chav Hey, where he says, Moar Ksuba, Shehu Hadavar Anitam Lebesula, he's the Kitachsev Gora Besulos, Vehem Hasivlonos, Shabachurim Shochan Lebesulos, Kasher Yisu Otan. It's gifts. Ah, then why do you need Mohar and Matan? Mohar is to her, Matan is to her family. Yes, I saw the word ksuba there also. Don't worry about it.
So, maybe yeah. The person, if he's in fact someone, he should give out of the generosity of his heart. He shouldn't give the davka 200 zuz if it's like sablonos.
But you talk about it as kimar habasulos, like it's a known thing.
Yeah. So how is that like sablonos? I don't understand.
No. What he's saying is, what you're giving is just stam gifts.
Yeah.
Not a formal obligation. It's whatever you want to give.
But when we're talking about Kamara Basulas from Mephata, obviously it's not a gift. Obviously, and not it's...
No, but he's saying it is.
It is?
That's what he's saying. He's saying, give like the gifts that you give. That's exactly what he's saying.
So, Midoraisa, if a person isn't very generous, you can give a tiny bit.
Yeah, that's what it looks like, no? I think that is what it sounds like. So far, that is what it sounds like. I'm going to come back to it, but so far, that is what it sounds like. I have 3 minutes to go, so we're not going to get that far with it. As far as the Nusach and Arksuva, that goes back to Maury's point from before about how to read the line, the Rush says, I'll tell you how to read that line. It's in source Chavav. Reisim Afarshim, Da'afilu, Hirgilu Lichtav, the Chazulechi, Mide Oraisa. The Rush notes that there are Nuschavs that don't actually have those words, that don't say that you get biblically. But even those who do, Modu de Ksuvas Isha de Rabbanan, they agree Ksuva is rabbinic. It's still derabanan. V'chachamim tiknu chamishim kesef mideoraisa perush mishkalim ha'amurim b'Torah mishum shalote kalabein av lahutziya. The rabbis enacted that you use deoraisa currency. That's the point. V'asmuchu akra de kemara b'sulos, linking it to the pasuk of mora b'sulos mishum hachi nehigi limechtav dechazu lechim mideoraisa, and therefore they write that is suitable to you mideoraisa shlo yita adam lomar kemen derabanan hilo sigbele nun sela medina, lest people think that it's only 50 sela of standard currency? Oh no, this is kesef tsuri. You're paying big bucks with this. If you know the Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Yud Aleph and Beis, you know that kesef tsuri is 8 times the value of kesef medina. By the way, this disagrees with what we were talking about before, Shanus. Mm-hmm. Right? This completely shoots that idea.
So
we were talking about the idea that ksuba is meant to be a year's support after the wedding is over. Now, it's definitely not meant to be for reasons that we've already discussed, but whether it actually is, because you pointed out, the Mishnah in Peah gives the basics of being an ani is that someone doesn't have 200 zuz, and Mefarshim there say 200 zuz is what one could survive on for a year. However, according to this, the ksuba is, those zuzim are zuzay medina, those are not kesef tsuri. So this is actually 8 times Yeah, it's eight-year support, not one-year support. Yeah, there you go. The eight is a malav in Ateva. The
actually use that idea to calculate the
interesting. Ksuba. So the Rama, just to note, in source Chav Zayin, the very quickly because we're getting to the end, but the Rama actually notes that according to this, the Besula's ksuba is 16 times the ksuba of the Almana. Not double the ksuba of the almana, but 16 times the ksuba of the almana. The Rama there also notes that that not everybody writes deoraisa in the ksuba, as we already saw from the Rush. So I have lots of sources that indicate that it's derabanan. I have Gemaras that bring that view. I have the Ramban who argues for that view. You can justify the way the ksuba is written, even with the word deoraisa if you have to. And the kicker is that the Rambam writes that it's derabanan. After all is said and done, the Rambam says ksuba is derabanan. I am not going to go through all of it, just to show you Chav Ches, and we'll stop there. The Eilak ksuba la'anusa, shelo tiknu chachamim ksuba la'isha, elak de shelo tekhala b'nev la'hotziyah. Leave aside the context, we'll come back to it next week. But the point is, the part that I underlined in which the Rambam says, chachamim tiknu. Ksuba is, fundamentally, a rabbinic enactment. Even though we saw 10 minutes ago the Rambam says that it's deoraisa, now the Rambam is telling you, no, it's derabanan. And the Rambam is not just going to say that here, he's going to say it in 5 different places that I can count. Ditto Shulchan Aruch, ditto Rama, and so we're going to have to come up with another way to understand what in the world is going on. If it's not derabanan, if it's not deoraisa, or it's both, it's a quantum thing. What exactly is it? So Amir Tashem, we'll continue with that next week. Thank you.